Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, to those high-level talks between the US and Russia about the war in Ukraine, they're underway in Saudi Arabia this morning without Kyiv or Europe's involvement. The Americans emphasise that the talks are not about starting peace negotiations, but to work out if Russia is serious about bringing an end to the war in Ukraine, while Russia says its priority is to begin normalising relations with the United States. Let's get more now. I'm joined by Tom Bateman, BBC State Department correspondent in Washington, D.C. But Tom, today you're in Riyadh and you were in the room with the other journalists just before those talks began. What was that like?
Well, it was pretty extraordinary. I mean, we were ushered in, but part of the US travelling press pool. There was also a Russian travelling press pool that was there, had travelled with Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister. So once the two delegations were in the room, we were brought in for a short amount of time just to, you know, film, take photographs and record sound. But there we saw that, you know, incredible scene, really. These two sides who have not had any contact, certainly not face-to-face at this level, for 3 years since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And then Washington, of course, leading the West in Russia's isolation, imposing sanctions, trying to leverage the Russian economy to deter President Putin from continuing the war. And so this was quite a very impactful moment, seeing the two delegations across the table sitting there. They turned to us, you know, for about a minute, didn't say anything. I asked a question to Mr. Rubio about whether or not concessions would be demanded of the Russians, and also whether they were sidelining Ukraine. Now, unsurprisingly, perhaps he didn't answer that. Mm-hmm. And I expect by the end of the day, we will have both the delegations trying to sort of, in a race, really, I think, to sort of set the narrative of the outcome of this meeting, likely talking to the press. So we'll hear a lot more, but these talks could go on for several more hours, you know, possibly till the end of today.
But you are expecting to hear from both sides once the talks end?
Yeah, I think we absolutely will. That's already clear. And, you know, in the run-up to this, it was sort of notable that whilst the US has been pretty guarded, really, about both the terms and the kind of format of the discussions, and in that space, the Russian sort of version of what this meeting was all about, I think, you know, filled some of the vacuum, because we had the Kremlin saying that, in their view, this was basically about the start of renormalizing relations between Washington and Moscow. Now, US officials said before the meeting that they didn't see it as any sort of a formal start of negotiations. So this was more about kind of scoping out the Russians to see if they were serious about starting talks, as Mr. Trump wants, to end the war. But the challenge, of course, is whilst they might sort of come out of this closer to a summit between Presidents Trump and Putin, the key demand, really, remember, of the Americans is for a quick end to the war. Mm-hmm. That is what Mr. Trump has promised his electorate. It's what he said during the campaign. He said he could do it in a day. Well, it's already taken longer than that, of course. The challenge is going to be, as in any sort of negotiation, if you want something quickly, it can reduce your leverage. And so I think we're sort of getting to a point now where, and especially what the Europeans are worried about, is if that demand for a quick end is one of the real issues that therefore sidelines Ukraine. And that's the big thing that Kyiv is worried about, is basically a carve-up carried out by the US and Russia directly without involving Ukraine or the Europeans, that would leave them on the sidelines and lead to a peace that, you know, the Ukrainians and the Europeans wouldn't be happy with.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we have these separate talks happening today, because we've Keith Kellogg, who is Donald Trump's special envoy for Ukraine, holding separate meetings in Europe this morning.
Yeah, I mean, when faced with the, you know, the sort of stunning anxiety that has rippled through Europe, given the American approach to this. You know, in Munich last week, you had the Americans basically demanding concessions of the Ukrainians, to end the war, but not articulating anything similar for the Russians. And so I think, you know, there is some reflection on that from the American side. And what they have tried to say is that this will be a sort of parallel process. The Americans will talk separately to start with the Russians and the Ukrainians as they try to broker and mediate a way forward. But, you know, it is not going to be lost on Keith Kellogg when he meets the Europeans today that their real concern is that the terms of peace may be such that Ukraine doesn't get a security guarantee. And that's why the British, for example, although saying they'd be prepared to send in British peacekeeping forces, that they need what they have called an American backstop. But that really means that at the end of the day, they want an American security guarantee, something that so far the Americans have been pretty reluctant to signal that they're prepared for.
Tom, good to talk to you from there. We'll keep an eye on your reporting from Riyadh. That's Tom Bateman, who has been travelling as a journalist with the US contingent and reporting from those talks which are underway in Saudi Arabia. Scott Lucas, Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD, is with us and listening to all of that. Scott, you heard Tom there describing those extraordinary scenes, the first face-to-face talks between the United States and Russia for 3 years. But we're told it's not about starting peace negotiations. So what do you believe will be on the agenda today?
As much as the Trump administration says this isn't about negotiations, this is about the Russians setting the terms for any negotiations. Of course, that starts by excluding Europe and Ukraine at this point, because Europe and Ukraine would object to those Russian terms. And it's important to define what they're looking for. I think in the broad context, and this was set out by Russia's ambassador to the UN last night. It was set out by the Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, just a few minutes ago. Russia is looking for long-term acceptance of its occupation, not only of the Crimea Peninsula, but of four regions of Ukraine, about a quarter of Ukraine's territory, two regions in the east, two regions in the south. Russia's even asking that it be allowed to take over 30% of those regions, which is currently held by Ukraine. This would reinforce its so-called annexation of the territories in September 2022. It is also asking for Ukraine to effectively be left at this point without security guarantees. Not only would Ukraine not go into NATO, but Ukraine's military would be limited. It would be limited not only in terms of receiving aid from other countries, its size would be restricted. That's going to be their opening gambit. But I think probably the headline issue to watch, and it's represented by a man named Kirill Dmitriev at the talks, who's head of Russia's investment fund, it is Russia wants a quick return in the lifting of U.S. sanctions, because that would ease the economic pressure on the Kremlin, which is facing a fairly difficult 2025 economically if the war continues.
Yeah, I see Kirill Dmitriev has been speaking to reporters at the talks and the sidelines of the talks, because he's not in the room. But interestingly, he says US businesses have lost more than $300 billion after leaving the Russian markets. Now, we know that arguments like those, they're the ones that Donald Trump tends to hear.
That's exactly right. And Kirill Dmitriev has negotiated with the Trump camp since January 2017, before Trump took office, about getting better relations between the Trump administration and the Kremlin. He met a man named Eric Prince, the founder of the U.S. paramilitary group Blackwater in the Seychelles in that year. So Dmitriev is experienced on this. And what he says is, here's the stinger. The U.S. and many other countries should understand that the Russian market is extremely attractive and it is necessary to be present in it. So you start with normalizing those relations, which means that Russia gets a lot more income coming in, that the restrictions, especially on its oil sales, which have been tightening in recent months, those are lifted. And so then the Kremlin has got more room for the political negotiations and the way that they play this line. And as Tom Bateman pointed out, the significant thing here is that the U.S. has not set down any terms from the Russians. There's all the concessions that were signaled by Trump's officials last week. Pete Hegseth, Defense Secretary, J.D. Vance, Vice President, come from Kyiv, not from Moscow.
So Europe then has to elbow its way into this deal. And how does it do that? And can it?
First of all, you know, you had the summit yesterday in Paris, convened by Emmanuel Macron with the leaders of several countries, spurred by I think the recognition after the Vance and Hoekstra statements that you can't count on the United States. So you've got to get a unified European line on support of Ukraine. This is not as much the headline issue, which is a bit of a distraction at this point, about peacekeeping forces in Ukraine. This is more about providing the military the economic aid that is necessary for Ukraine if the Trump administration steps away, and also demanding the security guarantees for Ukraine without any specifics right now about European troops. So Europe needs to set its own lines in conjunction with Vladimir Zelensky on what is expected. And that means that they are not faced with an ultimatum effectively by the US and Russia, because they've got their terms out there.
Mm-hmm. Scott, thank you very much for joining us. Scott Lucas there from UCD. I'm joined now by Richard Dannett, former Chief of Staff of the British Armed Forces and current member of the House of Lords. Good morning to you.
Okay, good morning.
So overnight we had the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer saying that this US backstop would be required to deter any future Russian incursion. Is that, in your view, a realistic assessment of what needs to happen?
Well, it's a realistic assessment as far as part of this goes. I think we'll take Donald Trump at his word. He needs us Europeans to step up and take a greater degree of responsibility for European security, and that is entirely reasonable. But it doesn't mean that the United States is walking out of NATO, that the United States is walking away from any responsibility for European security. It's a question of the United States dialing themselves down and encouraging the Europeans to dial ourselves up. That's fine. When Keir Starmer says that there must be an American backstop, it's part and parcel of that. The Americans have still got to be in the game, but the Europeans have got to be on the front foot and taking much more responsibility. And of course, coming, that means a significant increase in defence spending amongst European countries, of which, of course, as a Brit, I would say that the United Kingdom has got to step up to the plate even more than it already has.
Mm-hmm. And we know the conversations that happened certainly over the course of yesterday in that regard. But just coming back to the backstop in for a moment, I mean, given what you've heard, do you think that the United States will be willing to provide such a backstop, at least to some extent?
I'm sure the answer is yes, because I can't conceive that they would be, frankly, so irresponsible as to walk away completely and just whitewash their hands of Europe and European security. It flies in the face of history. We all know that the Americans have had to come in twice during the 20th century to bail out Europe. And frankly, if they were to remove themselves completely from the game in Europe now, they only run the risk of having to come back at some stage in the future. So go back to my original point. Europe has got to do more, but America has still got to be there, but in a less conspicuous manner. Mm-hmm. And when Keir Starmer talks about a backstop, he meant a backstop, but not a front player.
Because there have been, you know, so many takes on this over the last number of days, including the one that suggests that this is a complete shift in the world order here, when we have America saying you need to, you know, increase your spending, look after yourselves. Our focus will be on China, on protecting our economic interests back home. Do you see it in that way, that this is a fundamental change?
Well, you see, what you're describing there, Claire, is a rather binary response. It's all or nothing. We're all looking towards the Indo-Pacific. We're looking away from Europe. No, I think the solution, and even in Donald Trump's mind and amongst his advisors, has got to be much more nuanced than that. Yes, America's principal challenge is from China, and quite right that they recognise that. Our principal challenge in Europe is from Russia. So we've got to major on that issue, allowing them the space to major on the issue of China. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget the Middle East in the middle of all this. So it must be a nuanced solution and not a binary all in or all out.
Okay, so what in your mind, you mentioned, you know, Europe needing to shore up its defences. Where does that begin?
Well, it begins with most countries in Europe deciding to increase their expenditure on defence. Now, we've seen Poland, for very obvious reasons, bringing its defence spending up to 4.7% of GDP, of their GDP. The United Kingdom is agonising over going from 2.3 to 2.5. Frankly, that is not enough. That will only even fill the potholes of underinvestment which has occurred in recent years. We should be going to 3 or 3.5%. And I think a number of other European countries, the major European countries, France and Germany, should be thinking about the same in order that we can collectively have a credible set of armed forces that will deter further aggression from Vladimir Putin.
Because as it stands, it's right, isn't it, that, you know, if the UK were to agree or to be asked to supply a peacekeeping force in Ukraine, it couldn't be done right now.
No. I think we're looking at about a 1,000-kilometre front line. It would need many countries to put contingents in on to man a force like that. That force could be as large as 100,000. The UK might conceivably think it could put 10,000 in. Well, the way we rotate troops, that would require 30 or 40,000. The British Army today is 74,000 and already heavily committed elsewhere. So talk about a peacekeeping force is very premature. We're just at the foothills of deciding a ceasefire plan and some kind of peace agreement after that. It may well be that a peacekeeping force is required, but that's going to be some time before it could be deployed, and it's going to have to be grown. And it comes back to the original point. We're going to have to increase our expenditure on defence very quickly, have to mobilise reservists, make sure we've got sufficient equipment, and so on and so forth.
Richard, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Richard Dannett, the former commander of the British Armed Forces and member of the House of Lords.